The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Out on the road like a low-down Joe, and the bar where we are is so cool, I'd like to stay. Misunderstood like I knew I would be. The one I care for don't mind, she's built that way. I would gladly offer you my love in this hotel in somewhere USA. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates the work of Gordon Lightfoot song by song, a proud member of the FM podcast network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and along with me today is a fellow fan making his first appearance on the show from Perth, Australia, Jean-Paul Duguay. Jean-Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Michael, and it's great to speak with you.
Now, you and I tried to do this about a year ago, and because of distance and bad Wi-Fi, we couldn't make any sort of connection. So this episode is long overdue and long in the making. So I'm really glad that we were able to get it together. JP, tell me a little bit about your association with Lightfoot. How did you first get into Gordon's music?
Well, in the early 70s, I had heard songs like I Heard You Talking in Your Sleep and If You Could Read My Mind. And all the time I thought, this is an interesting voice and one which is definitely saying something here. And can I tell you my Gordon Lightfoot story?
Yeah, please.
I left my home city of Perth on Christmas Eve 1974 for a six-month working trip, 1,200 miles north to the totally new and foreign world of mining in an isolated area where my anonymity would be assured. Now, included in my luggage was a record player, of course, and a set of headphones and two LP records, one of which was by this sundown guy. So after being introduced to my new metal box accommodation and wondering about what I had got myself into, I laid back on my new bed and feeling sorry for myself, put on this sundown LP. And I got to tell you, after the first line of the first song, I thought to myself, wow, JP, you've chosen really well here. And the voice was so calming and captivating. Moreover, the line Somewhere USA told me he was lost and lonely as I was somewhere Western Australia.
Well, so it really kind of resonated with you, at least this particular song did. And the sundown guy was really at his peak back in those days. So yeah, great story. Thank you. Now, what do you like about Gordon's music generally?
I love the sincerity in the delivery of his lyrics. And that is usually a combination of nice lyrics and the enchanting colors of the chords choices, which Gordon Lightfoot obviously mastered. Notwithstanding his band members' presence and contributions, they are due a lot of credit.
Oh, yeah. He's always taken a lot of pride in his band, whomever was in it at that particular time, because there were a lot of changes. Now, what about live performances? Did you ever get to see Gordon perform?
Michael, I've never had the pleasure. I have not seen Gordon Lightfoot live. However, it was always high on my bucket list, but I have enjoyed the many images evoked by his lyrics over the years.
Yeah, I only got to see him the one time, and I wish I'd spent more time investing, sitting and listening to his music being performed live. Just didn't have the chance as much. Now, you wanted to talk about Somewhere USA, and you talked about being lost and alone. And for you, it was Western Australia. For Gordon, it's him being on the road away from home. And every musician, I think, probably feels displaced when they're on the road to some extent. I think for me, I love it so much because it's a very simple song, and it's an experience that other musicians have talked about, but he's very straightforward. about how it felt. He's not romanticizing the road and saying, well, this is the greatest place in the world to go. He's not being Willie Nelson saying, I just can't wait to get on the road again. He's much more like Jackson Brown saying, you forget about the losses, you exaggerate the wins. And it's a very catchy song also. So for you, what would be the best setting to listen to the song? Would it be sitting at home? Would it be on the road, in a car? What would be the ideal setting where you could just listen to this song and really have it wash over you?
I have two, in no order of preference. I like to be by myself, listening to Gordon Lightfoot, headphones, car, whichever. And my other preferred way of listening to Gordon is when I have my family in the car and all my kids are singing along.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah,
I can relate to that because my son, when he was very young, when I'd be taking him back and forth from daycare, he'd always want to hear Carefree Highway. So for months, we played that song every time.
They know every word to Sit Down, Young Stranger.
Yeah, that'll do it for you. I think for me, it would be, again, in the car, whether I had my family with me or not. But I would definitely not want to listen to it in a hotel because I think that would just be too cliched and I'd be trying too hard to recreate the experience that he was having. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. Now, the genesis of the song, Nicholas Jennings doesn't mention the song hardly at all in his biography. And I can't find out anything specific about how the song got written. It's clear what the song is about and what got him inspired to write it. But I don't have any specific information about where he was or what hotel he was talking about. Do you have, JP, any angle on how the song got written?
Well, although it hints strongly at him being tempted on the road, I think in order to maintain a non-judgmental appreciation of any song, one should detach the artist from the art, which makes the lyrics totally subjective and open to interpretation.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it quite in those terms before, but the fact that we don't know very much about how the song got written really backs up what you're saying, that Lightfoot didn't disclose that because that was something where he just didn't want to put it out saying, okay, I was inspired by this particular person or this particular situation. So he does a nice job of leaving it to our imagination a little bit. Let's look at the lyrics a little bit for the song. Out on the road like a low-down Joe, and the bar where we are is so cool, I'd like to stay. Okay, so he's on the road. This was written, of course, before Sundown came out. He's touring. We don't really know where the bar is. We don't know what hotel he's in. We don't know exactly where in the USA. He may not even know. And he's not in a luxurious place like a low-down Joe. This is not the Ritz-Carlton. You know, he's not having tea at Brown's Hotel in London. I mean, this is someplace where it's kind of a middle-class hotel, but it's got a bar. This is not totally luxurious, but it's also not a flea bag place either. Misunderstood like I knew I would be. The one I care for, don't mind. She's built that way. Interesting line here. And I'm wondering, what did he do to be misunderstood? And where is the one he cares for built that way? Does that mean that she knows how men are when they're being shy? Is he commenting on her physical build? There's a whole lot of mystery in this line.
My take on this has always been the one he cares for is back home dealing with the knowledge that he is exposed to temptation and she is strong that way and dealing with it.
So he is aware that she's at home and she's probably not comfortable with this, but he's not dwelling on it. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes. And that she's built that way. She's home with the knowledge and she has the strength to carry on.
Okay. And the idea of being misunderstood, does that have to do with, yes, I have to go play this gig and she doesn't understand why can't you just play a gig at home?
Yeah. misunderstood the reason for him touring and the overall reason for an artist touring.
The reason that musicians tour, yeah, they may want to let's go see the sights, but their record companies are telling them, okay, you got to go out on tour because you got to promote whatever record you have so that people are going to buy it. So it's a business decision. This is not him being a tourist. This is him going out, playing shows, and then going to the next town.
That's right. There's always the pressure.
Mm-hmm. I would gladly offer you my love in this hotel in somewhere USA. And we've already talked about he may not even know where he is when he writes this song. And that may be because he's intoxicated. It may be because the towns are coming so fast, he can't keep track of them. But I think it's interesting. He's saying he would offer her his love, whomever it is that he's talking to. But he's not saying, I will offer you my love. So what's the message there?
I don't think, as you said, I don't think he knew where he was in his relationship. That's what I got from that line. I think he was referring to his relationship, and I don't think he knew exactly where he was at the time. He still had things to work out.
Yeah, and this is 1973, I guess, when this song was written, or early 74. So we can trace the chronology of his romantic relationships if we wanted to. But yeah, he really doesn't have a very good idea about where he is. Otherwise, he would have said New York, USA, or Chicago, USA, or someplace like that.
Somewhere USA, yeah.
Somewhere USA, yeah, which I love that title. I think it's great. This rental car never went so far, but with each passing mile, one more dream has turned to clay. So rental car, okay, that is an economic move. A lot of bands in the 70s would do that, fly coach, and they'd get rental cars as opposed to getting limousines or something like that. Dreams turning to clay. Now, clay is something that you build with. It's malleable. You can stretch it. You can extrude it. You can twist it. You can shape it all sorts of ways. But he's saying each dream has turned to clay. Does that mean that the dreams have come true, or have they become disappointing? What do you think?
To me, turned to clay is something that has weakened and has died and no longer in use. Because clay to me is not strong. He's not solid.
So the dream is a little disappointing, maybe?
Yes, definitely. That's what I read from that, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Somebody once said you never should meet your idols because you'll only be disappointed.
The dream has died.
The dream has died, or at least he feels a little bit like he got a lemon out of this, which is a way of saying this is a disappointment. If not dead, at least not everything he hoped it would be.
Yes, exactly.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Did you know we have a full podcast series that walks through Bob Dylan's entire professional career? It's great for newer fans, or anyone who wants to take a thoughtful tour through the last 60 years of Dylan. It's called A Bob Dylan Primer, and it's a 16-part serial. Find it at fmpods.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts.
1 minute, you're a teacher preparing for the new school year. The next, you're transported to a fantastical realm shrouded in forgotten magic. The creatures around you think you're a long-vanished mage. You have no technology. You have no memory of how you got here, and no idea how to get home. All you have is misplaced magic. Haladar, The Last Surveyor is the new fantasy novel by acclaimed author Rob Perrier. Available now on Amazon.com and RobPerrier.com. Now that we've met and your eyes are all wet, let me fetch my guitar. There's a song I'd like to play. And it's interesting that the person that he's talking to, okay, her eyes were already wet from crying. Maybe he's sung something that has moved her in some way, which is a very romantic thing to think about. But now he's saying, I want to play you another song. And apparently she's not arguing. So all sorts of ways to go with this. Your thoughts on who this person is, why he's playing her a song or a second song. Is there a second song?
He's speaking to the lady involved. Her eyes are wet from having heard his story and where she stands. She's not going to be a part of his life. But nonetheless, he will continue doing what he does, and that is to serenade this lady as he does countless others.
So she's probably realizing that this is wonderful, but I'm never going to see you again. And I kind of think of the Carpenter song Superstar. He's going to move on and go to the next town and talk with another woman in another bar. And she's going to be there saying, don't you remember you told me you loved me?
Yes, that's the way I've always read that line.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Carpenters, but I thought it was a decent pop culture reference there. I would gladly offer you my song in this hotel in somewhere USA. Now, let's stop there for a second. Gordon spent a lot of his time in hotel rooms, a lot of his time on the road, and he wrote a lot of songs in hotel rooms. Ordinary Man is one of them. Hang Dog Hotel Room is probably another. And I think what he's saying here, he loved the company of ladies. We all know that. And he loved serenading them. And I don't know how much of that was individually and how much of it was just, okay, any of you females who are out in the concert tonight, I'm going to be singing this and a lot of the women would take it to heart. Anything you can add to that?
I would gladly offer you my song is exactly that. He loves serenading ladies. And it means everything to him to serenade. So he feels a sense of achievement if he's able to serenade.
You know, it's interesting you say that achievement, because the serenading in many cases is going to be a prelude to something else. But I think the fact that he loves to do it and that he's found one other person that he can focus on is probably a good way of looking at that. I'd never lie, well, you know I've tried, though you think it's the drink that has made me behave this way. And this is a little bit of a confession for him. He's been drinking. We know that he was an alcoholic for many years. We know he got sober in the early 80s. And I'd never lie, well, you know I've tried. I wonder why he throws that in here. Any thoughts on that?
This passage makes more sense to me if he's talking to the one back home and saying, I won't lie. I've tried things, and you can't blame it on the drinking alone. There are other factors at play here, as you and I both know.
So,
but once again, Michael, let's separate the art from the artist.
Yeah, well said. Because it's interesting, because up to now when he's talking about, he's using the pronoun you, so he's talking to the woman who's right in front of him. But now it seems like he's turning back to the woman he's in the relationship with.
There's a lot of that in that song, where he's going to and fro.
Yeah, and it doesn't make for a coherent story, but it does make for a fun song. Again, you know, separating the artist from the art and trying not to read too much into the verbs that he's using and just kind of let the song wash over you, like I've said before. One never knows where the good times go. If you've got some to spend, we'll do anything you say. He wants this person to stick around. He's lonely, as we've already said. He wants to be kept company for whatever is going to happen. No strings attached. Just please stick around. He doesn't want to be alone in his hotel room again. And so I think that may be my favorite line in the song, because he's really saying, you know, I'm lonely. You could almost, if you were doing a tweet about this song, that would be the one that I think I would use.
Yeah, I think that line is hypothetical. That's the way I read that line. He would offer her his love, and it's probably something that his life is leading to.
Got it. And then he ends up in somewhere in USA. He really rounds out the song very completely. So it's like a really good essay. And I think that says a lot about his thinking as a writer, that he said his piece and he gets out. Well, the song does appear, as you said, on Sundown. I believe it was the first track on the album. That song was not released as a single. The album went to 13 in Australia, according to the Kent Music Report. The record did go to number one in Canada and number one on the U.S. Billboard 200. It's the only time that Lightfoot's had a number one. And then the album went to number 45 in the U.K. So, JP, I wanted to ask, what is your favorite musical aspect of the song? Now that we've looked at the lyrics, what about the accompaniment or the vocal? Anything there that really stands out to you?
My favorite aspect of this song is its simplicity, simple structure, and the warmth, and what you can do with three chords, and what a beautiful, relaxing melody that can be expressed with the use of three chords.
Yeah, and a fairly stripped down arrangement. I mean, this is not something where he's trying to be really complex. This is a song that it's not cerebral. I mean, it doesn't make you think too much. It's just one that you enjoy. And I think it's probably, if it is in fact the first song on the record, it's very strategically put there because it's not heavy right away.
Instant relaxation.
Yeah, perfect singer-songwriter kind of stuff. My favorite musical aspect of this is that it feels like New Kid in Town by the Eagles. I think it's the same key. It's close to the same tempo, and it's about the same kind of gentleness that you have there. Again, easy to listen to and fun to listen to. The musical aspect of it, it was a lot of the usual lot. Okay, Lightfoot was playing 12 string and doing lead and backing vocals. Red and Terry both played guitar on this. Red played electric guitar. Terry played acoustic guitar. John Stockfish was playing bass, which is interesting because by that time, John had left the band. Gene Martinek played the Moog synthesizer. Jim Gordon was playing drums, and Milt Holland got some percussion in. So this is a pretty strong combination for a very strong record. And it shows in all of the songs on the album, really. Now, JP, when I was doing my research on this, I found out Gordon never played this song in concert. And I'm wondering why you think he stayed away from this.
Well, because this song is one that can be easily misconstrued, and given the fact that there was discord in his relationship, there would not have been an appropriate time or place to play this song live, I don't think, because once again, of his personal situation.
I think what you're saying is that it kind of cut too close to the bone.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't find any official English covers of this either. Some people have probably just sat down and played it and then uploaded it to YouTube, but I haven't found an official cover. It was adapted by a Czech artist named Dusan Vankura, and I haven't listened to it because I don't speak Czech. I would have loved to have heard Jimmy Buffett cover this song, and he did have an affinity for Lightfoot, and I think he covered some other Lightfoot songs. Is there anybody that you would like to hear play this song, either who is no longer with us or someone today that you think could do a good job on it?
I have two... If that's okay, Michael. In no order of preference, I have Johnny Cash. I think would do this song a great deal of justice. And Jim Croce, only because I love Jim Croce so much for his talents. Either one of those.
And it's interesting that we both picked artists that aren't with us anymore. That there's nobody contemporary that we think could have done it. I couldn't think of anybody that I would want to do this. But when you're talking about Lightfoot, Cash, Croce, and Buffett, they are all...
They lived in that time.
Same era and in the same genre. And they're all in the great acoustic guitar jam room in the sky. Croce left long before he should have, and Cash stuck around a lot longer than anybody thought he would. JP, as we're sort of wrapping up here, any other closing thoughts on the song? We've talked a lot about it, but anything else you'd like to say?
I would just like to say, Michael, like numerous others, this song has made Canada a place that I would dearly like to visit and bring those images that those lyrics have conjured to life.
You know, I'm right there with you. Not this song so much, but I think as a body, his work makes me want to go to Toronto, to go to Orillia, to go to the places that he liked to go and do what's sometimes called the Lightfoot Trail. So I hope we both get there at some point to see that part of the world. JP, this has been a lot of fun. It was long overdue, but I'm glad that technology came back and saved the show. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Michael.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. Our website is www.lightfootpodcast.com. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com. Well, our next episode will feature my guest Jeremiah Bronson from Ames, Iowa, and he and I will be discussing Harmony from the album of the same name. That will be coming out in early July 2024. Until then, for Jean-Paul Duguay, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.